thanks for joining me today on the podcast, The Psychology Report. You know, drug use in the home has been a major topic of consideration over recent years, particularly with the growing interest on the part of the American population to allow drug use in our homes and in our schools and in our communities by voting in and allowing for individuals to use drugs for recreational purposes as well as medical purposes. So we've seen a great deal of drug use on the increase in recent years, and we're going to see more of it on the increase. But today what I'd like to do is to not focus on the evils of drug use, so to speak, and there are those. That's what they are. There are evils of the drug use. But I'd like to focus on the issue of who are the ones that do not use drugs, the non-users of drugs. What are their homes like? What are their parents like? What is the nature of the relationship between the child and the parent of the kids that do not use drugs? You know, we have over the years blamed mothers, you know, for the problems of our children. When they go awry, we always blame the mother. When they have great successes in life, we put it on the father and give him the glory for it. We have this issue of teachers in the life of our kids. If our kids have problems, we blame the teacher. And if our kid succeeds, we don't necessarily commend or praise the teacher. We commend and praise ourselves or the child. So we have this kind of mixed up way of looking at the behavior of our children and the factors that play a role in bringing about certain behavior patterns, such as drug use, if you will. And what we found is, of course, in our research over the years, is that both mother and father play a major role, a little different role, however, in the life of their children. And I'm going to identify that a little bit today as well. But it's often not found to be the fact that there's a mother in the home or that there's a father in the home, although those are major positive contributing factors to what children become. But also, the amount of work that those parents engage in the course of the week. If they're absent from the home, that is, both parents are absent from the home and work 60 hours or more, their children are at risk. And the more that the parents work, such as 80 hours a week, those children are very much at risk, unless there are some prevailing factors that would counteract, such as a grandparent in the home, or a nanny in the home, or a permanent babysitter that's there when the kids go to school and when they come home from school. You know, whatever, but there has to be some kind of parental positive involvement in the life of the children if the parents start to work more than 60 hours a week. So it's just one of the prices you have to pay. You work more hours, you make more money, but you have to spend that money in the hiring of people to be with your children when you're not, and make sure that they have positive parenting in your absence. Now, put that aside for the moment, and consider this research study that was conducted several years ago. 450 young people in the ages of 7 to 17 were evaluated relative to their drug use, and their parents were evaluated relative to their parenting style in the home. Interpersonal and attitudinal factors were measured. The relationship that the kids had with their parents was measured. The style of parenting was measured. And what they did is to see how much time, obviously, the parents stood in the home or were in the home as well. And then they rated these kids in regards to whether they were non-drug users or frequent drug users. Well, here's the general findings, and they're quite profound, and I think they're instructive, you know, for any parent And certainly parents who have children in the ages of 7 to 17, which was the focus of this particular study. And these are guidelines for parents. These are kind of mandates for parents as well as research findings. They're the guidelines that parents should be using in terms of their parenting style and their relationship with their children. So let's take a look at the six findings that they came up with, okay? There was a closeness between the parents. So there was a closeness of the child to the parents. There was a closeness of the child to one parent. There was a closeness to the child with the other parent. And there was a closeness with the child to both parents. So in other words, there was not this strained relationship, but there was a welcoming relationship. There was a warm relationship. There was a integrated relationship between child and parent. And they liked each other. They spent time together. There was a ongoing consultation between child and parent. There were activities. There was talk. There was sit time. There was watching television time together. There was activity time together. In other words, there was this general physical and emotional closeness of the child to at least one parent, but usually with both parents. That was the non-drug user, okay? Now, here's another finding about the non-drug users in their home. There was an emphasis in the home about getting along with parents. In other words, parents expected the children to get along with them. And they expected themselves to get along with their children. There was this expectation and the emphasis that we are one, we are bonded, we are a family, and that we get along with each other. We work together. We work out problems together. We make things happen together. We work on projects together. When there's a problem that comes up, we work on that problem together. In other words, there was a getting along. There was kind of a oneness. There was an integration between the child and the parents in the home with that emphasis that we're going to get along. We are a family, and we get along with each other. We learn to like each other. We learn to respect each other. We learn to be good to each other. We learn to be kind to each other. That's what the emphasis was in the non-drug user home. Okay, here's the third point. There was a desire on the part of the kids or the youth to be like one of the parents. Okay, that's an interesting point right there. In other words, the parents behaved in such a manner that not only did the children respect them, but the children wanted to be like them. They wanted to be like the father, whether it would be in the same occupation or career or attitudinal pattern or behavior patterns or social patterns. But there was that tendency on the part of the youth of those homes to follow the patterns of their parents. Parents went to church, kids went to church. You know, parents worked, kids worked part-time. Okay? Parents were kind, children were kind. Parents picked up things after them, kept the house clean, kept the house orderly. Kids kept their house clean and their room orderly. In other words, there was that desire on the part of the kids to be like at least one parent, if not both parents. So there was that honor that they gave their parents. It was that respectability they had for their parents and wanted to be like them. Okay, let's look at number four result on this research study of 450 kids. There was a perceived attitude on the part of the kids for a trust in their parents and a trust of their parents for the kids. In other words, a mutual trust, particularly on the part of the mother, particularly for the mother. The mother was particularly the person of trust in these homes. She did what she promised. She did what she claimed. She did what she usually does. She did it in routine. She did it regularly. She was predictable and was able to make that relationship a very positive one for their kids in their home. So that was the role of the mother, to make sure that the kids trusted her and that the kids made sure that the mother lived a life that they could trust. So they're working together in this area of trust. And when there was a trust broken, it was brought to the attention of the parents, and they dealt with it. Okay? That was four. Now, number five is this. There was regular encouragement and praise on the part of one or both parents for the kids' behavior. In other words, kids in these homes were regularly praised and encouraged. You know, we have this formula that has been found in other research studies that if you're going to criticize your child, you need to have paid in advance at least five, if not seven, compliments, statements of praise. And then that child will allow you to be critical and will learn from your criticism. But if it's the other way around, you're giving a lot of criticism and very little praise, that child's going to reject your criticism and reject you as a person, as a parent. So it's very, very important that there be this frequent use of praise and frequent use of encouragement on the part of one parent, certainly, but both parents better. Okay? Be a praising and encouraging and affirming and rewarding parent. And then, there was the ability and freedom to talk about personal problems with the father. That's the interesting thing. The ability to talk and to have a freedom to talk about any problem, but certainly personal problems, with the father. That was the role of the father uniquely in these homes. Obviously, it was important to talk to the mother too. But that's the unique role that father often played in these homes with non-drug using kids. He was there, he was available, and he was open, and he was approachable, and he was able to be talked to and brought issues and brought problems to him, and he was in the problem-solving role with the child. So the research in this non-drug using population is quite profound, actually. But when it comes to the style of parenting, here's another issue that was found as well. It was not the parents who were strict and set forth a non-drug policy or a non-drug rule in the home. That didn't particularly play out or work very well. But what it was that parental strictness or firmness is probably a better word, firmness in setting limits and for the involvement of the parents in the decision-making of their children at all age levels. But it was that firmness, setting expectations, homework expectations, clean-up expectations, project expectations, grade expectations, treating each other with positive affect and positive relationships. That was expected. And the parents were strict and firm on those kind of things. So it was a general firmness in the family about all things, not just setting rules about non-drug use. That didn't work, because it wasn't balanced in a home, perhaps, with all these positive elements of the relationship between the parent and the child. Okay? So, rules are important, but it's the entire home that's run on a kind of a expectation of certain things taking place, certain rules that are to be followed and be honored and to be appreciated, right down to the use of cell phones and to the use of videos and so on, and the friends that you have and the friends that you bring home and how you spend time after school and so on. There was expectations, there were understandings, there were memos of understanding, so to speak, between the parent and the child. They operated a home with, I'll use the word rules, but with expectations that were kept. Not just one rule that says no drugs. That didn't work. It was the general operation of the home and how it was run by these particular parents. So, interesting research study. We can learn a lot from that. And it might be a model. It might be an example for us as we are concerned about our children not getting involved in the drug scene. And maybe the first inclination is for us to just set the rule, say, can't do it, don't do it. No, that didn't work. You have to have this family connection, this family relationship, this family openness and closeness that this study seems to underscore in its findings. So thanks for joining me today in the podcast as we look at the types of homes and the types of kids that do not use drugs. That's the model. That's the example we want to develop in our own homes with our own kids and make sure that it works well. Okay? So thanks for joining me today. And again, I will just direct your attention to the rescue mission of your community. In Fresno, it's the Fresno Rescue Mission. And then they have a program for mothers and children called Rescue the Children. And I recommend that you get involved with a program like that if you haven't liked to volunteer. But if you can't volunteer, send them some bucks. They need it. That's what they run on. That's what they operate on, is the donations of people. So they work with the people on the streets. You don't have to give your money to the person on the street corner. That's just going to be used for more alcohol and lifestyle that you don't particularly appreciate. So give your money to the rescue mission. That's where these people go, and that's where these people get their help. And they're not going to get a meal and a bed and a place to stay, but also a career development plan. They can have an educational plan. So if you're not in Fresno, wherever you live, there's a rescue mission somewhere nearby. Look it up, become acquainted with it, and support it. Send them some dollars. They appreciate that very much. Okay, bye for now.